and welcome to episode 25 of the Home Hour podcast. This is the show where we talk about everything that goes on inside your four walls: parenting, family, food, organizing, homemaking, and even the work we do from home. I'm your host and the author of the Happiest Home blog, Megan Francis. We've got a great show today. Later on, I'm going to be talking to Monica Bidet, who is an author of several books on Indian cooking, as well as a lot of other kinds of writing that we'll talk about. You're definitely going to want to stick around for our conversation. But first, I'm talking with Sarah Powers, who comes on the show every now and then to talk about motherhood. And our conversation today is about birthday parties. You might remember if you listened to episode 24 that last week, just as I was signing off, I was going to bake the cake for my daughter Clara's fifth birthday. And so we talk a lot about that, but of course we taped this segment before that party happened. So we were talking about it beforehand and just our different approaches to planning birthday parties and how much planning a child's birthday party actually needs. It's kind of fun because we left the conversation talking about what I was going to do for Clara's birthday party. And so now I'm here to update, and I'll do that again a little bit later. Hi, everyone. I'm here with Sarah Powers, managing editor at The Happiest Home and creator of the blog Powers of Mine. Sarah comes on the show every now and then to talk about mom stuff with me. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks.
So today, Sarah and I are going to talk about birthdays, specifically birthday celebrations and how we manage those for our kids. We both have birthday kids coming up or have just recently had birthdays. And I know we have slightly different approaches to how we do birthday celebrations with our kids. But Sarah, I'm going to let you go first and just talk about how you typically do birthdays with your kids and if you've evolved that over the years at all or plan to change it as they get older.
Yeah, no, I think it has evolved. I don't really go all out. I'm not a super like party planner, event planner type of person. But I have a very good group of close friends with babies and kids all the same age. And so those kids like to celebrate each other's birthdays. So we always do something with the friends. Usually, since we're in Arizona and we have many months of good weather, usually it's at a park, you know, with cake, with balloons. So fairly simple. I will say that I like to think of myself as a laid-back, simple birthday party person, and that without fail, that sort of like messes with my brain and I end up at the last minute being like, oh wait, I could be laid back, but I still have to organize a few details. So I need to be better. I'd like to be better about, just because you're planning a simple laid back, scaled back celebration, you still need to sort of think ahead and you know, so that you're not stressing at the last minute. What ends up happening is I feel like I end up stressing at the last minute and I'm not even doing an over the top party. Does that make sense? I don't know.
It does. I have my version of a laid back birthday party is literally like, especially when it's not a super, you know, big birthday year. So, you know, like the first party was always a family event and I'd have lots of people come and that kind of thing. And then there's like those sort of intermediate years, where it's for us, it's like a cake, some candles, a couple of gifts, ice cream, and whatever family members happen to live in town that can make it over that day. So it's very, like, very laid back. But I will say, so that for me doesn't really seem to require a lot of, I have to have the gifts and I have to have the cake and, you know, that kind of stuff. But that really doesn't require much. However, the problem is that when I get into that really laid back birthday mode, when I want to do something that's a little more special for whatever reason, then it's like I have to shift. So this year, for example, the boys, I promised that they could have a joint party at the roller rink. And we usually don't do those kinds of, like, we usually don't do classroom parties. We usually, if they have friends over, they have them at our house. We have a slumber party. We order pizza. It's very, you know, just not a lot of pre-planning. And so this year it was a little stressful because I thought, oh, well, I don't even really know how this works. So wait, what do I have to do? Do I have to like bring a tablecloth? Like all these things I hadn't really thought about. But I will say the details didn't come together perfectly in the end, but they had a great time. They just wanted to, you know, go roller skate with their buddies and could really have cared less about any of the details, the cake, all that stuff. A lot of times I think that's more just like you said, it's for our peace of mind. So we know that everything is going to come together smoothly.
Right. Yeah. And whether it's a lot of details or a little details, it's still, you know, there are still things to think about, you know?
Right.
I know you have a bunch of birthdays in a row in the fall, right? In your family. Because I think that affects it too. So my poor middle child is not only the middle child, but his birthday is a month after my oldest. So they are April, end of April, and then the beginning of June, just like, and so I've always felt bad for him because he's the second child. So like the first birthday party was like fun. And then he didn't even get his first birthday party. So it's not only that dynamic of first child, second child, but it's also his birthday's a month later. So it like comes around and we have the same group of friends. Like all my friends have kids the same age. And I'm like, well, didn't we just do this? Like, didn't we just have everybody come over and have cupcakes? And it feels like, well, he's getting to the age where he's going to want his own, even if it's just a little party, he's going to want his own thing. And it might just like, in my mind, it feels like, well, wait, we just did this. Like, well, you don't need a party, you know, anyway, poor guy.
Yeah. I think that for us, what we've done when it's what we try to do with the kids. So we have a September, October, November, and December birthdays. Uh-huh. And the older two are September and November. And then the younger two are October and December. And so what they'll do, every kid gets their own cake and ice cream day. I mean, that's their quote unquote party where they get a couple of gifts from the parents. And we don't buy a lot of gifts on birthdays. We really, because I mean, we're ramping up to Christmas and they are bam, 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 right in a row. So they'll get a few things. And, but they get to the kids get to have either joint sleepovers, which worked for a long time, but now my high schoolers do not have the same sibling groups as friends anymore. Right. So they alternate years. So, you know, Jacob, my oldest, this was his year, I believe, for, I think he had a bunch of friends over. They went to the movies. We came back and they had a sleepover. Next year, it'll be Isaac's turn. Okay. Same thing with William and Owen. Like one of them gets the sleepover this year. Although they did do a joint party, so technically they weren't supposed to get the sleepover this year, but I caved. And, you know, it's all about the flexibility because you'll have, like, when my older sons were little, they had literally the same group of friends.
Right. That's the stage we're in right now.
Yeah. And so it was really – I thought it was really easy because we would just do one party and it was – everyone would come. And then one year I realized, like, oh, well – now one of them's in middle school. He doesn't want to hang out with his elementary school aged brothers, you know, and all the brothers' little friends. They want to do something separate. Right. So I had to change that up.
Yeah.
And this year, Clara's turning 5 and she's always had very laid back parties, just like all the other kids, and has never gone to school. Starts kindergarten next year. But so she, you know, she's got like her 2 female cousins who live in town who are her buddies. And then she has 2 little friends who are boys who are about her age.
Okay.
And so there's really never been a big opportunity to do, you know, a princess party or any of this girly stuff where, and there's no classroom to invite.
Right. Right.
So I don't know. It's funny. This year she's turning 5 and I want to do something a little more special because she's my last child.
I feel like the 5 is big. Are like, they get,
I lost you.
5 just seems big. I think to moms and to kids.
5 does seem big. And I think that I remember it. My 5-year-old birthday is the one. Now it's funny because my memory is of my brother trying to open my present and like me hitting him. But the fact that I can actually remember that birthday, I remember what I was wearing. I remember my little brown Mary Jane shoes with the strap. I mean, I can remember it really clearly. Yeah. And so I want to do something special this year. And I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm going
to
do.
Does she go to a lot of birthday parties? Like, does she have an idea like of what's possible, what she wants? Or will she just kind of like
she'll go with whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think luckily in our family, mostly we keep it like everyone has sort of the same approach. We don't like my brother's and sister and I, we don't buy each other's kids birthday gifts because there's like 15 kids.
Right.
So that would be ridiculous. And at some point it would just be like trading money. Right. It'd be like taking a $20 bill and just handing it back and forth.
Right.
So we don't do that. You know, we keep the parties pretty low key, or if it's like a group party, it'll be something like, hey, I just rented out the gym at the high school and all the kids are going to go run around and throw balls. I mean, so Claire's been to a lot of those kinds of parties, but I don't think that's quite what she has in mind. And I thought maybe this year I might try to go a little over the top and get all Pinteresty with it. I don't know.
I think you should. And then you should
blog about it.
You know, I will say, I think you, like the communities where you and I live are probably different because or maybe it's just that my like peer set has younger kids, but I do feel the Pinterest. I'm pretty good at resisting that pressure myself, but it is pretty widespread. I mean, people do, it's not of criticism. People do really cute things, but like where the favor bags will have a sticker that matches the cupcake topper. And it is like, it's alive in real life here in Scottsdale. And again, not a bad thing, but yeah. It's like, it's not just on Pinterest. People really are doing, and I think some moms really enjoy it. So I think like anything, if it floats your boat, do it.
I think that probably is going on here as well. I think that I have just maybe by the nature of having so many kids of such varying ages that I've sort of been a little isolated from being in with any one sort of group of mom, like similar age group of mom, kids mom. So I guess what I mean by that is I'm not hanging out with a ton of people who happen to have kids who are all Clara's age. It's right. Like I've sort of got the friends that I've got and they either have kids that are her age or they don't. Right. But the few times that my older kids were invited to classroom parties, there was a wide variety of types, you know? Mm-hmm. So sometimes it would be very simple, go to the YMCA and play on the equipment. And sometimes it would be, you know, much bigger, like at someone's house. And I think that there might've been one with a pony. There's definitely been bounce houses involved. I know that for sure.
Well, I think from the mom perspective too, it comes back to if like what's fun for you, if it's stressful for you and you're miserable by the time of the party, that's not really a gift to your child, you know? And so I think what's fun, I love taking photographs and doing things with photographs. And I like usually like 5 minutes before the family comes over, we'll hook up my laptop to our TV, which we're like techie nerds. So we can do that and run through a slideshow of the birthday kid from when they were little. Now, to some people, that would sound like something that would be a nightmare and take 2 years to put together. Right. But it's like something that's fun for me to organize my photos and to have photographs. And so, number one, it doesn't take me very long because I'm in iPhoto all the time and I have things relatively organized. I know how the technology works. And two, that's like fulfilling for me. I love looking at old pictures of my kids and I love, you know, doing those kind of slideshows. So, but I'm never going to bake from scratch and I'm never going to make favor bags with, you know, hand stamped logos on them.
So it's figuring out what you're good at and what appeals to you.
Yeah, because the kids will be fine either way.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. And thinking about this too, I think that sometimes there's a transition that I have to almost like remind myself to make, you know. For so long, I was sort of in the survival mode because I had 5 small children, you know, ages 11 down to newborn. And so birthday parties, and because of the nature of birthday parties happening, you know, one after the other, I kept everything very easy. But my life is different now. And there is like a crafty side of me that I don't indulge very often that I would like to indulge more often. And it can be a creative outlet and an art form. Right. And one of the very first podcast episode I recorded Kelly Hinton.
Yes, I remember that one.
And she talked about some of the stuff that she does, you know, for her birthday parties, which are gorgeous and obviously a huge labor of love for her. But I remember her saying something like you can buy pre-formed fondant online. And I was like, what? I didn't even know to look for that. Like, I'm so not immersed in that I didn't even know that was a thing that you could go buy. Right. I assumed she was hand forming fondant into little bows and whatever. So there's always something to be learned, right?
Right. No, that's true. Another thing you can do that I didn't know is have use Etsy, because I know you and I both love Etsy and it's fun to support, to design your invitation. So sometimes if you are mailing invitations for like a bigger party, there's design, because I think of Etsy as like something that you would buy that you would get in the mail. I wouldn't think of it for design services, but I've seen some really cute invitations that use like, you know, your child's picture with then whatever the theme is. And, you know, those moms aren't, it's not like you have to design that yourself. And that, so I thought that's another like example of something like that, that number one, it's cool to be able to do that from Etsy, but number two, you're not necessarily doing it yourself. You're just resourcing, you know, finding ways to do that.
So I have to share now that I'm thinking about this Pinteresty birthday thing. A few years ago, I think it was when Clara turned 3, I decided that I was going to make her those rainbow cakes in a jar. And those were hot, really hot that year. So basically, I took like the jelly-sized mason jars and you fill them with layers of different colored cake. And then you just put them in the oven and they cook. Well, they theoretically bake through all the way. Some did not. But I thought they were really interesting. I thought they tasted pretty good. But the boys all decided they were horrible. And they bring it up. And they all convinced Clara, who doesn't even remember. She doesn't remember her third birthday. Right. But they bring it up. They brought it up to her so often that she'll say to me every couple of days, like, Mom, you're not going to make me that rainbow cake again, are you? Please, Mom, don't make me that rainbow cake. And I was like, you ate the whole thing. She doesn't remember that she loved it. But the boys talk about it all the time. Hey, Mom, remember that really horrible rainbow cake you made that one time? And I was so proud of myself for making it. And I thought it turned out great. And it turned out they all hated it. So it's, you know, but it's worth the shot. Hey, right. I tried it.
Totally.
And it didn't quite work out the way I expected. I don't know if my oven wasn't quite the right temperature or if I didn't let it preheat long enough to bake all the way through or what. Who knows, right? Sometimes when it came out to the table, it was very impressive and everyone went, ooh, non. Sometimes those are the moments you live for.
Yeah, so. Totally. And it is. I mean, it is. That's the fun part of Pinterest is that, you know, if you're going there to get inspired and get ideas, it's fun to put it into practice.
Yeah. Yeah. So I need to come up with a theme for Clara's birthday that is good, that is girly enough to suit her because she's kind of going through a very girly phase right now,
right,
but will also be acceptable to all the little boys that she plays with because she has a lot of little boyfriends.
That's so true. We did once a garden theme, which is good for spring birthdays because everything at Target, like the dollar bin, is like gardening. And then you can kind of do like butterflies, flowers. But we also made a dirt cake, like, you know, those Oreo pudding. So I have spring. Allegra's birthday is April. So I feel like whatever holiday is near, there's always a lot of like spring, Easter, that kind of stuff.
Do you want to hear something really depressing?
You've already done that.
Clara's birthday is March the 13th. It's not going to be spring here.
Yes, I know.
Most years I would say, yeah, that's a great idea.
But Target will think it is.
That's true. Maybe we'll just give everyone
fall when it's 110 degrees here. Yeah,
we can create spring inside the house, even if it's not happening
outside.
That's
true. You can't be outside.
And actually, she would love that because Clara has been coming to me and saying, like, Mom, remember when I used – like, she makes it sound like we're in the middle of, you know, like a nuclear winter or something. And she hasn't – she'll come and say – she'll say, Mom, remember when I used to go outside and play with the roly-polies? And then she sighs and said, they're probably all dead now. And she says this look. It's like she can't even remember what it was like to be warm, like that kind of a thing.
Well, that was a good one for us 1 year. It was garden. And it is sort of boy-friendly because you can do like gummy worms in the dirt. And we gave like potted plants. But yeah, yours would have to be inside.
Exactly. So when is the next birthday coming up in your family?
So end of April. And she'll be six. So
do you have an idea
Violet
yet of what you're going to do?
Violet turned one in January, so we had a first birthday. But yeah, so I feel like from now forward, they talk about their birthdays. Do you get those Oriental Trading catalogs, you know, with like the plastic tchotchkes and stuff?
I know what you're talking about. I have gotten them. I must have fallen off of their list because I never bought anything.
Order from them, but their birthday catalog is separated by theme. And actually for little kids, it's really fun because they kind of get the idea of what is a theme? Like you know, and they'll sell the party favors and the balloons and the plates. And I kid you not, I have never ordered a single thing from there, but it gets the kids thinking about like, I want a dinosaur theme. Like my 3-year-old says theme, like he can't say the word, but my theme is going to be superheroes. So I swear they start talking about their birthdays like now, but their end of April will be the next kid birthday. And yeah, we will enter the whole classroom thing this year because she's in kindergarten and I don't plan on inviting the whole class, but I think she may expect some friends from school. I don't know how we're going to navigate that this year. So
yeah, it does get trickier there. I mean, some schools have rules about that. Like you can't invite some kids. And I would never send invitations to school and exclude some kids. I mean, there was one time that I kind of tried to go that route. I was like, hey, I can't remember which kid it was, maybe William. I said, hey, just, you know, bring these in and be really stealthy about it and just slip them into the kids' cubbies who are coming. And of course, he said later, he's like, oh, well, I did that. And then I was telling everyone on the playground who was invited and who wasn't. And I said, okay, that's not going to work. So now I contact the parents and I don't even really, I try to keep the kids kind of out of the planning. I just get in touch with the parents and like, they all know when it is.
Yeah.
And so I don't get those weird, you know, that just the bad feeling, but I can't invite all the kids in the class.
No, and I don't think
party.
Like, I agree.
And I'm not offended. I mean, I would find it very strange if a parent was offended that her kid didn't get invited to a party for a kid that they weren't really good friends with, because it's not like my kid getting invited to a party is the highlight of my week.
Right. No.
You know? It's not like I'm like, oh man, No birthday parties.
No, I think you just
weekend.
Cross your fingers and hope most people are kind of on the same page as
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
With you. I agree. Totally.
Yeah. So, okay, well, we have to wrap this up, but this has been really fun. I know birthdays can be it's kind of a big topic because people are all over the place with the way they feel about it. And we could go into a whole nother gifts, no gifts. Oh, man,
right.
this topic could take us, you know, several episodes.
Part two.
to cover part two. We should come back and do a part two sometime because I'm really
curious
after
to
know.
Well, after you do Clara's Pinterest-inspired
yes.
party.
Oh, my gosh. And then I can have some photos in the show notes and we'll see what went right and what went wrong.
Clara on probably to
that is actually a fantastic idea. Let's do that. Okay, we'll plan on doing that. It probably won't be till April or May, but we'll definitely we can get both the girls on and they could talk about how their birthdays went and what went wrong.
yeah from the child's perspective.
That would be funny. All right, Sarah, well, this has been great. Again, Sarah will be on again in a few weeks, so make sure you tune in to the next show. Bye, Sarah.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed my conversation today with Sarah Powers about birthday planning. As an update, I did end up planning Clara's birthday around a theme. It was a luau theme, actually. I got the idea because I had some Hawaiian-themed party favors left over from a swag bag at a conference I attended last year. From there, it was actually pretty easy to build on the idea, and the cake turned out great. So maybe the lesson here is that party themes don't need to be complicated to be fun. And that actually just having some place to start was the first step. So in our case, it was a bag of Lay's and some tropical colored napkins. I'll actually share the post where I wrote about the outcome of Clara's party in the show notes at thehappiesthome.com/episode25. And I think Sarah and I really are going to do a show with the kids at some point to talk about their birthdays because I think that would be really fun. I also want to take this opportunity to give a shout out to Amazon Prime because it made the process of planning and shopping for Clara's party so much easier. I used the free 2-day shipping and the easy quick purchasing a lot, and I used it not only at Clara's birthday, but at the holidays and pretty much year round. So if you'd like to sign up for Prime now before the price goes up in April, just go to my affiliate link. It's at thehappiesthome.com/Prime. Again, that's thehappiesthome.com/Prime. Okay, so now I want to introduce today's featured interviewee, Monica Bidet. Monica is a mother of two, a writer, and the author of several cookbooks, including her most recent cookbook, Modern Spice. She and I talk about how food shapes family life, cooking with unfamiliar spices, and how to introduce kids to new flavors, as well as some exciting things she's got coming up, like her new fiction book and a digital storytelling project called Powered by Hope. Hi, Monica. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so glad to have you here. So Monica and I, for listeners, have known each other online for probably going on a decade now. I know that Monica is celebrating 10 years as a writer, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show because she's got something really cool that an offer for people who have dreams of their own. But I want to back up to the way I was introduced to Monica, which was through her food writing. Her book, Modern Spice, came out in 2009, so it is turning 5 this year, and that's very exciting. And Monica, you've written a few other books about Indian cooking and cooking with spice. Please tell me about your sort of body of work.
So even before I tell you about my body of work, it'll interest you to know that I am not actually a writer by profession.
Okay.
I'm not a journalist. I never went to journalism school. I'm actually an engineer by trade. And I studied engineering. I came to the States to get 2 master's degrees, both of which are in like really geeky, boring subjects like, you know, computer systems. And
right,
so that qualifies
right.
me perfectly for writing about. I mean, I came here, I studied, you know, I had the great American dream. I had the big 6-figure job. I had everything which people wanted. And I decided that that just wasn't for me. It was just not one of those things that, you know, I didn't get up in the morning and go, woohoo, leadership training today, let's go rock it.
What?
You know, it wasn't working for me, the corporate thing. And so 10 years ago, actually, I quit and I decided what I really wanted to do with my life was write. And so I've been writing about food and parenting and travel and pretty much now after 10 years, just writing about anything that interests me. I have several Indian cookbooks out, which you were just kind enough to mention. And I have one book out, which is not about food, but it's called In Conversation with Exceptional Women, where I interviewed other women who were doing, you know, just amazing things, just to ask them, hey, how did you do this? You know, what can I learn from you? And I learned some really great lessons. So it's been a fun ride. I still can't believe it's 10 years. And I can't believe we met online. That kind of used to sound really shady. it's like
not as much anymore, right?
Not as much, but it was sort of the virtual version of we met in a bar.
Right, know, like, exactly.
No, this is good. This is all legal.
I love it. So let's talk about food a little bit, because then I want to you've got so much cool stuff going on, and I definitely want to talk about all of it. But I'm going to start with food because because I feel like that's been such a big part of your brand. And it kind of does also tie into parenting. So Monica has two sons. They're 7 and 14. And you've written about sort of family life through the lens of food and how food, you know, what the impact that it had on your upbringing and now the impact that it has on your family life. And I would love it if you could talk a little bit about your history and then how you've brought that into your career as a writer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. What a great question. I mean, I think I grew up I grew up in India, obviously, and in the Middle East, but I grew up in a very food obsessed household. I mean, every discussion revolved around what are we eating next? And it's not just that, but food and the food culture of India is so strong. I mean, you don't even realize it. I'll give you an example. When I first decided to write about food, I was invited by a chef here in Washington, D.C. to come and watch him cook. I didn't know anything about French food. And he said, well, why don't you come and I'll teach you something? And I thought, okay. So I went into his restaurant in his kitchen and, you know, he gives me his lovely apron and the chef hat and everything, and we're ready and we go in. And he starts making the sauce, and all of a sudden he sticks his finger into the sauce and starts to taste it. And I was like, John, what are you doing? And he said, he looked at me like I'd lost my mind. And he said, I'm tasting the sauce. Don't you taste when you cook? And I said, you know, I don't. Because I grew up in a household where the first taste of the food was always meant for God. You know, so if you tasted while you cooked your food, you were making it impure.
Wow.
And so
okay.
I learned to cook without ever tasting. So no tasting for salt, no nothing. So John looks at me and he says, well, obviously God doesn't live in your house. So who actually had the first bite? So I remember growing up, you know, my grandmother would take the first taste out of everything that she had cooked and put it in a plate, and would go in the backyard where we had a little barn and give it to the cow. Mm. And so John looks at me very seriously. He sticks the spoon back in the pan and gives it to me and says, here, Monica, taste this. There are no cows in D.C. So, you know, food sort of is in every part of my spirit. I think everything I do is guided so much by the food and food culture. And the same thing for my children. You know, they... by God's grace, they're good eaters. I had nothing to do with that. I read about parents with picky eaters and I feel for them because I didn't do anything differently with my children. They just enjoy different foods, which is great for me because they become really, really good tasters for all my recipes and things that I test. And, you know, even when they're outside, they're tasting, they'll be like, Mom, you could make this with this and this would be really good. And their palates are so clean. They can really pick up the tastes really well. So it's been such a blessing, you know, to have that.
And to see it through their eyes. Do they, Absolutely. I'm sure their experience of eating and family dinners and cooking and everything is sort of this really interesting mix of the way you grew up. What a fun story. And then this Western modern culture that you live in. So how is that ever, does that ever cause conflicts, or is it just kind of cool to watch the blend of the two?
There are days. there are days. I mean, I think I'm going to send my children into therapy because I would give them like rose milk that looks like strawberries and tell them it was strawberry milk. And the first day they came back from school, they're like, gee, Mom, the rose milk at school tastes really different from what she knows at home.
So funny.
Okay, sorry. But it is different. And I think sometimes... as they get older, it gets easier because earlier, you know, they were very aware that their food was very different, particularly my older son, not my little one so much. And it was hard for him because he's like, why is my rice yellow? You know, everybody else eats white rice in school and you give me this, you know, yellow looking rice. And so I had to explain to him that, you know, our culture is different. We eat differently. But the area that we live in, you know, he's got friends from Brazil and Argentina and Italy and Ireland and, you know, Japan. And so when they all come over for dinner, it's amazing to him. He's like, Mom, they're all eating our food. I'm like, yeah, because their own food is so different too.
Right.
You know, so he's sort of, I think that approval of peers was a thing with him for some time, but it's been really good. And now he goes to their place and he'll come back and, you know, he'll tell me about new dishes that he tried. Like he tried kimchi at his Korean friend's home and things like that. And I'm like, what did you think? And he said, yeah, it was really interesting, but I'm so glad that he's open to trying different things now. Right. You know,
that is a gift, because I think sometimes when you wait, and you know, I grew up in a very sort of, well, it wasn't, let's just say there wasn't a lot of spice in my food growing up, because it was this very sort of northern Scandinavian meat and potatoes, very, very salt and butter, basically, and some pepper. I mean, there wasn't a lot of other spice going on. And I think I had my first real ethnic food when I was well into my teens. I mean, we didn't even eat pizza. There wasn't even like a pizza place. So this is how kind of how different it really was. And then it was harder because it was unfamiliar, and I've grown to really embrace it. But as a teenager, I didn't want to eat even Chinese food, which, you know, often kind of Americanized Chinese food is just like an excuse to eat a lot of salt. Right. But even that to me was sort of like, oh, I don't know. So I think it's really great to expose kids early.
I know, but you bring up a great point, because, you know, I grew up in the Middle East with my parents, and my parents, I don't know how your parents were, but that generation, like my parents, eating out for us was like such a big treat. I mean, we'd maybe go once in 2 months to eat something, but mostly my mother had a very Indian palate, so mostly it would be very much Indian food. So when I came to the States for the first time at 20 years, I'd never eaten a taco. I had no idea what peanut butter tasted like. Wow. I mean, it was all these new food. Like, all that was new for me. Like, I could cook up a lamb curry like nobody else, but I'd never tasted a McDonald's hamburger, you know? So it was all so new to me. And I started to try it slowly. And I remember one time, this is a very embarrassing story, but my first visit, I'd been in the States for about 2 weeks. I went to visit a friend in Jersey who invited me to a Mexican restaurant. I'd never eaten Mexican food before. And I remember looking at the menu and feeling so overwhelmed. And instead of helping me, she's like, what, you've never had a taco? Where were you born? Oh, no. And it was just awful, you know? Yeah. So I'm so careful not to do that to other people because it's, you know, these days it's different. These kids are growing up with so much access to so many different things. We didn't have that when we were kids. So, I mean, I only ate Indian food, you know, and that was my thing. Everything else was, you know, as different as could be.
It's so funny because somebody would think, well, you know, you're from another culture, so you're going to be more cultured, but you're just more cultured in your own culture.
Exactly. Yes. No, I was petrified of a taco, let me tell you.
Well, and it's funny too, because, you know, you bring up the Mexican restaurant menu, which can be very overwhelming, but, you know, when you've eaten off of a Mexican restaurant menu a few times, you start to realize that essentially they're just different combinations of the same basic foods, which is any culture's kind of food. You know, I mean, it's not, you can't boil it down to five things necessarily, but there's always commonalities between different things. So then once you kind of understand the formula, with the case of Mexican food, knowing the difference between a taco and a tostado or whatever it is, then you kind of crack the code. But if you're not familiar with the code, you don't know what you're getting.
Right. And a lot of people shy away from Indian for the same reason, because they're like, oh, Indian food is so spicy. Oh, Indian food is, you know, all deep fried and it's unhealthy. And it's not true. You know, you go in and you, like you said, you crack the code and you look for dishes that have been grilled. You look for dishes that are cooked in tomatoes instead of cream. I mean, pretty typical, right? Anything with cream and butter is going to be heavy for you. You look at, you know, some of the oven roasted breads. It's a terrific meal. And there's so many vegetarian choices too. But I can understand that fear, because I had that for a long time, going into a new place going, I have no idea what I'm doing here. And it's even more embarrassing as a food writer, because I went to Paris on a cooking trip and I'm looking at this French menu. I'm like, I have no idea what this menu says.
Yes.
And I was so embarrassed. I don't know anything about French food. And then I thought, well, I'm not expected to know anything about it. I'm here to learn. So it's okay if I just don't know anything and I just say, please order for me.
And you can always ask the waiter you know, the staff to help you. That's one thing. I mean, I think the first time I ate Indian food, I was in my 20s, but I just went to a restaurant and said, please tell me, I've never eaten Indian food. Where do I start? And I had, it was one of the best meals of my life. So it's so unexpected.
That's terrific. Absolutely terrific. I think just being open, as with anything in life, I think, you know, if you're open to trying new experiences, the best is yet to come.
I love that. So let's talk a little bit more about food before we move on to the other awesome things you have going on. Two things in particular. One is that I imagine that you have writers or readers who write to you and ask for help introducing their children to Indian cooking or Indian spices. Does that, I'm assuming, or just more spicy food?
Just more spices. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So do you have advice for parents whose little ones just, you know, shy away from it, or absolutely, ways to kind of start incorporating it? Please tell.
Absolutely. So the way I got introduced to this was really funny. I've done a lot of parenting writing. I do stories and write about how children should be introduced to spices. And I do it with my kids, but all that seems very intuitive because I'm a mom, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was really funny about a few months ago, this woman called me and said, listen, would you like to come and teach a class about cooking with spices for children? And we'll take care of everything. You just need to show up. And I said, sure. It was a James Beard stage. And I said, how many kids? And she said, 50. And I said, fine, I can do that, right? I'm a mom. I can do this. Megan, I show up over there. The average age of the child is 3.
Oh, my goodness.
There are 3 and 4-year-olds with their aprons ready to cook with spices.
Oh, my goodness.
I learned so fast how to talk to children about spices.
That's awesome.
So, you know, what I was telling them, and I think it sort of, they understood it. So I love to say this, that spices, you know, like I was telling them how when they go out to the pool or they go out in the sun, their parents apply a sunscreen on their skin, you know, to protect them. So spices are like the sunscreen for their insides. You know,
like
they take care. They take care of your body from the inside, and they're really good for you. And the way I taught the kids was just take some of the basic spices like turmeric or salt or pepper or coriander or cumin, which is very common in Mexican cuisine. Mm-hmm. And you know, add one or two things at a time so people can learn to appreciate and love the flavor. Kids love that. If you just make a chicken and add a little bit of turmeric, it just changes the color. It doesn't change the taste. But turmeric is so good for the kids. I mean, if you walk away from this podcast and think of the one spice that you could use with your kids, I would say turmeric, because it's the most important ingredient in curry powder. You know, it's what gives Indian food its yellow color. Mm-hmm. Now, why is turmeric important? It's a natural anti-inflammatory, so it means it keeps your body functioning well. Turmeric has also been proven in India to be one of the reasons that India has the lowest cases of Alzheimer's in the world.
Wow, okay.
And they say it's because of turmeric in the diet. So adding it to a young child's diet is great. You can add a little bit to their soup. You can add a little to their salad. You can add a little bit to your meatloaf. You can add it to macaroni and cheese. As long as you're adding just a little bit, about I would say half a teaspoon for 4 people, you're not going to alter any taste. It's just going to look yellow. It's the only thing it does, but it's wonderful to add to broth. I remember as a child, if I ever had a cough or a cold or any sort of upper respiratory issues, my mother would give me half a cup of warm milk with a little bit of turmeric in it. And it's really, really good for your system. So we tried this with the kids there and they loved it. You know, they put their hands in it and they got all yellow and they were giggling and laughing. And it's harmless. I mean, it doesn't do anything to you. But that's the thing with spices and the kids is, you know, children love it when they can get into it and do it themselves. So I always encourage that. Like another really, really good spice to introduce your children to, which is so good for them, is ginger. And so give them ginger. Let them learn how to peel it. Even little hands can peel it. You know, give them a little cheese grater once it's peeled and tell them to grate a little bit. And you can add a little bit of it to your salad. You can add it to your stir fry. You can add it to your rice before it's cooking. These are very, very flexible spices that you can pretty much use anywhere, but they also have the biggest bang for the buck.
Right.
You know, if you want to get healthy, these are the few things. I mean, Americans love to use black pepper, which is excellent. Now, if you combine black pepper and turmeric, black pepper is supposed to have an ingredient that makes turmeric even more powerful. You know, so next time in your salad dressing, when you're adding black pepper, add a pinch of turmeric. It's only good for your system, you know. So I think that's what the kids is. Just get them in, let them do it themselves, let them get their hands in there. It really annoys me when you know, so many people, even in India, they're like hesitating to touch the food. I'm like, it's going into your body. It's much more intimate than even having sex. You're putting everything in your mouth.
Right.
You know, so wash your hands, clean up, and touch your food.
Touch your food. Yes. I love that. And I'm really curious because I know, you know, with parents who have a sort of a typical American background, there's always those go-to dishes that everyone's familiar with, like a pot roast or lasagna or whatever. So what in your house, what are the two, you know, the dishes that your kids would they're your go-tos? They're the ones that you know if you put them on the table, everyone's going to be happy, or at least that child's going to be happy, and you can turn to it again and again.
So one of the things my kids absolutely love to eat, and no matter when I serve it, they're very happy to eat it. I do a stir fry of which has a base of like ginger and garlic and onions and, you know, basil or cilantro, whatever you like. And I add in a bunch of vegetables like cauliflower and red pepper and carrots. And then I add in my meat, which is either any kind of protein you like, beef or chicken or shrimp. And then salt, pepper, turmeric. And just give it a nice little stir, a little bit of soy sauce, and with a side of rice. They'll eat it any time of the day. And I add peanuts to it because it's, you know, it's a really nice protein. And it's great for them. It's a fussless meal. It's something they can eat without any, you know, drama or any of this thing. My kids like fussless. This is really good. The other thing that they will eat absolutely anytime, and this is, again, going into they like to eat what they can make. So quite often at our house, we'll have it a make-it-yourself night, where what I do is I'll cook ingredients like chicken or peppers and things and put condiments and all this stuff out along with wraps. They make their own wraps. We've done it with baked potatoes. So I'll make a baked potato, put it, and then have like 10 things that they can top the baked potato with, like a baked potato bar. And they love it. They'll be topping it with corn and guacamole and salsa and this and that, and they eat everything, but they're doing it themselves. I mean, if I made it and give it to them, they'd be like, I don't want to eat a baked potato.
If they make it themselves, they love
they
it.
They make it themselves, so they love it. Yeah, those are some of the go-to things that they really love.
Okay, that's great. And do you have recipes for any of that on your site, by the way?
I think a lot of the stuff, if you go to my site, the stir fry is definitely on there. There's tons of kid-friendly recipes on the site.
Okay, great. I'll link to that in the show notes. Okay. So speaking of food, you have, and spice, you have a new ebook coming out in the fall. Tell us about that book.
So the book coming out in the fall is food related. It's going to be called A Spice Sommelier. One of the questions that I get most often is, you know, I've bought the spice, but I don't know how to use it. I don't know what to pair it with. Like, what does ginger really go well with? Is it everything? Is it just two things? So what we try to do is create a very user-friendly little book that says, this is the spice, this is how to use it, this is how to pair things with it. Like, what is the flavor profile? Just like a sommelier would do when he brings the wine to your table and says, this wine pairs well with this chicken, with this, with that. What does that really mean, you know, in terms of a spice? So that's what the book is intended to do. It's going to be very inexpensive, easy download. I'm trying to make it so that, you know, if you're in your kitchen and you're on your phone, you're like, oh my God, I need to quickly look this up. You can do that very easily and you don't have to rush around looking for, you know, a physical book. So we're trying to make it as simple as possible for readers.
Okay. And I assume if someone like signs up for your email list or something like that, they'll find out about it when it comes out. Okay.
Absolutely.
I'll direct
and
people
I think,
that way.
Yeah. I think in about a day or so, if you sign up for the email list from my site, you're also going to get a free download. We're just getting that set up today. Yeah. It's a free download of the top 15 best recipes on my website. Very kid friendly, very easy.
Nice. Okay.
Very easy to do. Yeah. So if you just download that, you'll know what to do with turmeric and ginger in a heartbeat.
Awesome. All right. Well, I want to shift gears just a little bit because Monica has such neat stuff going on that is not about food. She is full of surprises. So Monica has a collection of fiction stories coming out. Tell us about that, Monica.
So I'm very excited about this. You know, 10 years ago when I quit my job, I never really thought I would be a food writer. I just wanted to be a writer. And, you know, they said, right, yeah, well, but people love putting people in boxes, you know.
Yes.
I started writing about food, so I became a food writer. So now I'm trying to break out of my little box. And I'd been writing a collection of short stories for a long time, but just never sending it out because I was, quote unquote, a food writer. Or to make things worse, I was an Indian woman food writer. It's like they'll put you in a box every which way they can.
Yeah, yep.
And then I was approached by a friend who was doing an anthology for the noir series from Akashic Books. She was doing a Singapore noir series, and she said, you know, do you have any dark stories that are based in Singapore? And as it turned out, I did, because I'd visited Singapore and was so fascinated with the city. And they picked up the story. It's coming out in June in their collection. And it just inspired me. I thought, well, if she can look at me more than an Indian food writer, Indian woman right. food writer, I can too. So I've put together my collection of short stories. We have a great team. I hired a whole team of copy editors and cover designers and beta readers. And everything's ready to go. And the collection launches in June. And it's called The Devil in Us, Stories of Love, Life, and Redemption.
I love that. And I love that... you to some extent have reinvented yourself or are, it sounds so final. It's not like you're saying, yeah. I am no longer a food writer. That's over. You're embracing different aspects of your talent and your interests and just in broadening your career. I think that's amazing and brave. It's something that I think a lot of people just don't think they can do. Once they're doing one thing, that's what they're known for. Shifting is kind of scary because you don't want to, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know?
Yeah, I think, but also what's happened sometimes, and I see that, you know, I teach a lot and I mentor a lot of writers, and sometimes this not moving can become, you can become very complacent.
Yes.
And the marketplace is really changing, and I feel like more and more and more, this whole genre thing is going to go away. You know, yeah. Nobody ever says anything to a chef when he decides to open an Italian restaurant, then a French restaurant, then, a Spanish restaurant, then this. They're like, yeah, he can cook. So he can cook pretty much anything if he tries enough or has enough experience. But writers tend to get the short end of the stick where, okay, if you're writing about food, then, you know, you obviously cannot write about anything else. Or if you're an aeronautical engineer, you know, you can't write about anything at all other than that. That's not true. I am an engineer with engineer training, writing about food, writing about parenting, writing about travel. And so why can't I write a short story about an incident, you know, about some incident? So I think it's just, but I think the thing is you have to be willing to push yourself out from that. Because it's very easy for editors. If you don't fit in their box, it's very hard for them to sell you. For any profession, not just writing. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you are an artist who paints modern things. And if you decide to go classical, but I don't know what to do with you.
It's harder for them. It's harder for them to do their jobs when you change up. But that's not really your problem. Your problem is now getting in front of the right people or maybe creating a new team that like you're doing. That's amazing. Who can help you kind of get out there.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing that holds me back, and I think this is true for so many in the writing profession, is this fear of unknown. I mean, you know, if I come out with this in June, will they love it? Will they hate it? And I have to keep reminding myself that I didn't get into writing to get people to love it or hate it. I got into writing because I love to write. And I think if you put your soul and spirit into what you're doing, it will engage with people. You know, it's all about the journey, about getting there. And it was very funny. I was talking to a friend and I said this exact same thing that I just said to you. I said, you know, I'm petrified if people just hate the novel. You know, what if they just hate my short stories that come out in June? And she said, well, what if that's God's plan for you? What if his plan is that they hate your first selection of short stories? Then what? And I thought, oh, that would make me very sad. And she said, well, then what? And I said, I would go and write the second one. And she said, if they loved it, I said, I would then go and write the second one. So she said,
either way, you're going to write the second one.
Either way, you're going to write the second one. So let's just move it along. But it's hard.
Oh, I like that.
Anxious. You know, it's very hard not to be anxious.
It is.
It's just.
And you're writing for an audience and you want them to like what you're doing, but at the same time, part of being a writer is coming to grips with the idea that not everybody is going to like every single thing that you do. And not only is that okay, but that's good.
Because
if, you know, if everyone's okay with everything you do, then you're not really doing anything very interesting. You know, I have to remind myself of that every single thing.
I wrote a story recently about, living with a life of chronic pain. I have some chronic pain issues. And when that story went up, I got so many emails from people saying, oh my God, you know, thank you for sharing this, you know, whatever. We have some similar things and things like that. But then it was interesting. Somebody wrote to me and said, you wrote about chronic pain. Aren't you worried that some editor is going to read this and never hire you again because you have chronic pain issues? And I thought, I would never in a million years.
Right.
Gone down that, you know, that way of thinking. Right. So it just goes to show you, you'll never know what people are thinking. It's just that I think my job is to do the best work that I can, to put out the best story that I can, and then write the next one.
And, you know, that's very fear-based thinking. I mean, you can't go around, you can't build a career or, you know, that a body of work that you feel good about based on being worried of what people are going to think about it or what other people might say or how it might affect your business down the road. And that's just no way, that's not really the way to embrace your talents and your ideas.
Yeah. No, I think it's hard. I mean, fear is there. It's with me every single day. And then I just have to say, yes, I know you're here. Thank you for keeping my ego in check.
Right, exactly.
But it is paralyzing some days. I won't lie to you. It's hard some days. You know?
I totally agree. It's interesting. I was on a podcast not long ago where the host asked me to name a big failure that I had had. And then when I thought about it, I realized that maybe, and I don't want to use the word failure, but I'll use it anyway. Maybe a failure that I've had is not having a big failure. Like never having taken such a huge risk that anything I put out there could totally flop, you know what I mean, in such a big way. And so this year I feel like one of the things I'm really going for in 2014 is putting myself out there in a big enough way that it could actually flop, like that in a big way. That's a totally different way of thinking about risk taking.
Yeah. And I think it's a very good thing, because I always feel like, you know, we grew up with this philosophy that my father had, that he always would say, you know, what we think is what we become. It's an old Buddhist philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it was like what Henry Ford would keep saying, if you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't. You know, that's the thing. It's like you just have to go and keep trying. And if you keep your attitude that this will move me forward in some way, even failure moves you forward, because you just realize things that you're not supposed to do. And then just keep going. I think the worst thing for any person who's an entrepreneur is to stop moving.
Mm.
You know, when you stop creating and stop moving, that's worse than death for an entrepreneur, I think, because it'll kill your spirit. As long as you're moving, even if you're falling down, it's okay. You'll get back up.
You're still getting somewhere.
You're moving. There's motion.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Exactly. So in this frame of thought, let's move on to talking about sort of your celebration of your 10 years as a writer and this project that you've got going on. It's a free email program. Is that correct? A free email?
Yes.
Powered by Hope. Tell us about Powered by Hope.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So Powered by Hope is a project that was born this January. And the way it happened is that I've been writing for 10 years. And I write a lot of, I talk about a lot of my failures on my website. Let's just put it that way. You know, I'll talk about what happened when a story that I got was, you know, that was assigned but never ran. Or when an editor said, hey, I really don't like, you know, what you've written. Or a reader sent a nasty email. Or a student once sent me an email that said, you know, I'm in law school. I really want to write about food, but I think I'll stick with law because isn't that, you know, because I want to do something that makes a difference.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah. So you get a lot of that. And then I thought, you know, I've been dealing with this. I've been writing on this. And, you know, by God's grace, it gets an amazing response on my website. And I thought, well, what if I took all my experiences of, you know, failing and succeeding, of trying and then just moving forward, everything we just talked about, and I package it into an interactive newsletter that goes out once a week for the rest of the year as a way of sharing what I have learned over the 10 years in hopes that it can help somebody else follow their dream. You know, so Powered by Hope started in January. Every Monday, the readers who signed up get a little blog post from me about, you know, a topic of interest. Like this past one was about the choices we make. You know, we can either, if there are two choices you have, one choice that causes more anxiety and depression and hurt, and the other choice is things that are going to make you prosperous and happy and wealthy. The question was, which choice would you make, and how would it sort of help propel you forward? It sounds sort of obvious, but you have to read the story to sort of see which choice would be good for you. And, you know, I started putting these stories out on Monday, and every Tuesday I go onto Facebook, where I normally tend to post my content anyway, and we have an interactive discussion with readers who are reading. And it's amazing. You know, each post is getting hundreds of people talking to each other about,
awesome,
you know, what they learned and how they can help each other. It's making connections. Somebody went on a couple of weeks ago and said, you know, I wish I could do X. And somebody else said, oh my God, I can help you with this. I don't even need to be there. I'm just sort of
They're just helping each other.
Which is what this is all about. The idea behind Powered by Hope was to give people hope, to help people move forward in following their dreams, and to say, listen, it's okay to fall. We are all there with you, you know, and we'll all lift you up and move forward. So That's what I've been working on. It's a project close to my heart. It's free. You know, there's no charge. The only thing is to, you know, read it and use it. It's like if you get a new bike, you know, if you keep staring at it, you're never going to learn how to ride it. You got to get on it.
Right. Absolutely. Well, this has been great and very inspiring, Monica. We have to wrap up now, but tell us where we, as Powered by Hope, at your website.
Everything's on my website. Yeah, everything I've mentioned is at monicabidet.com, and you can go find whatever you need. And if you have any questions, you know, write me. I'm always happy to chat.
Okay, great. And that's Monica. And then the last name is B-H-I-D-E. Correct. .com. And there will be links to it in the show notes as well. So if you want to find anything we've been talking about, I'll link up to your Facebook page and your email sign up and all that kind of stuff so you can follow Monica's work. It's really interesting and obviously very inspiring. You're doing really cool stuff.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of the Home Hour podcast. As always, if you want to find out more about today's guests or some of the things we talked about, you can visit the show notes at thehappiesthome.com/episode25. You can also find all the previous episodes in one place by visiting thehomehour.com. I would love to hear from you, so please feel free to leave a comment on the show notes or send an email to podcast@thehappiesthome.com and let us know how you like the show and maybe what kind of guests you'd like to see in the future. Also, if you'd like to be a part of a future episode, go to the show notes at thehappiesthome.com/episode25 and scroll to the bottom where you can record your question or comment right from the page. I'll be back with another episode next Thursday. Until then, best wishes for a happy week from my home to yours.